You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is being recorded in the evening of September 17th, 2024. We are on Radio Albion, and of course, this is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Sometimes I tend to shy away from domestic political concerns. But given the nature of the regime, the domestic is a global and vice versa. I want to first talk about, by my count, the sixth assassination attempt of Donald Trump. There were four in the, or at least three in the 2016 campaign. There was one in 20, and now there's two. I may have the number. I think the number's about six. I forget off the top of my head when they occurred. So at least five. Now we have another. And the reason I want to talk about it is because Ukraine is at the center. Most of you know what Johnson's Law is. It states that the more obscure a country or a part of the world, the more that reporters, media, can lie about it, can make up stories about it, North Korea being the most extreme example of that. But part of it also is that in obscure areas, reporters, who are not experts on anything, don't really know much about it. In that case, they're not necessarily lying, they just don't know any better. Or worse, they're being told, and since there's so few to fight back, the emotional cloud that the regime has created over these places is so bad that they get away with it, at least as far as the broader society is concerned. What I didn't take into consideration when I was at the Barnes Review writing on Burma, where I first formulated this idea, I didn't take into consideration that this could have deadly repercussions. The notion of projecting an enemy, constructing an enemy rather than responding to one, can lead to deadly results at home. Because this attempted assassination down in Florida is based to a great extent on that. The story goes that this is a Ukraine-obsessed man, so to speak, who somehow got up from behind his whatever a shed company, whatever he does, and suddenly had the wherewithal to go to Afghanistan and recruit fighters there to go to Ukraine. Now, of course, we know this occurred last Sunday in West Palm Beach, and he was arrested, and strangely enough, not killed. He was at the perimeter of the golf club, and he allegedly had an AK-47 with a scope. The Secret Service agent had spotted this, forcing the guy to run away, something I suspect he's done quite a bit. And his name is Ryan Ruth, age 58, who is from North Carolina, I think, living in Hawaii, who enjoys wearing pink t-shirts. And the reason I mention him going to Afghanistan is that you can't just do that. This guy is no expert on anything. Yet somehow he has the wherewithal to travel to a place, by the way, very difficult to travel to. He knows where to go. He knows who to talk to. He can talk to them. Getting them to sign up to go over and fight in Ukraine, since the Taliban have won the war yet again in Afghanistan and are in the process of rebuilding it. You can't do that unless you are an intelligence asset. The only thing it could possibly be is that he really is just that delusional. Most of you have heard what he said to Newsweek in June of 2022. Yes, there are people who actually read that. And he said that the conflict there is definitely black and white, good versus evil. In other words, this guy simply absorbed the narrative, thinking that assuming he's being told the truth, and then went on to act on it, possibly with violent results. Now, the guy may not have done these things. The Russians tend to think that he has. Therefore, he has to be not just an agent, he has to be a very well-placed one. Now, no one can tell if he has, one news outlet said that he recruited Taliban fighters, which sounds more interesting than anti-Taliban fighters who are still in the country. He was also the head of something called the International Volunteer Center, based in Kiev. So clearly the guy's an intelligence asset. Just before his Newsweek interview, there was a video, briefly he was in it, in favor of the Azov Battalion. Of course, the response, now whether he got shots off or not is another matter. Of course, you have the typical attacks on Trump that somehow he deserved this, but Kamala Harris said something for once and said that she is deeply disturbed. But she really was, you know, talking about how great Sheriff Bradshaw was. Butler, Pennsylvania. What was that? 2 months ago? Well, mid-July, I suppose. Leading to the resignation of the head of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle. And Ronald Rao now is dealing with this one. No one's quite sure if he attempted to join the Ukrainian army, but was clearly rejected for God knows how many reasons. I'm sure there are many. The Ukrainian military did mention that he was unsuccessful in his attempt to do that. Even there, he has to have some language skills. Getting to these places is not easy. Many of you have seen his media reports, his ridiculous book, which I've only glanced at. I think it's been pulled since then. Now, according to CNN, for what that's worth, Ukrainian land forces, at least the officer corps, says that yes, Ruth has been in touch with them, but he was so delusional that they didn't pursue him. The quote is, and this is from Ukraine, "He was offering us large numbers of recruits from different countries, but it was obvious to us his offers were not realistic." It came from the Ukrainian military spokesman. He said, "We didn't even answer. There's really nothing to answer to. He was never part of the Legion and didn't cooperate with us in any way." Alexander Shuguri, spokesman for Kiev, said this, saying that he was simply delusional. Well, we can take that with a grain of salt. It sounds about right. The option, as I said, is being an actual, either a delusional man or someone who is an agent who really knows his way around this. He may be posing as a typical civilian, but chances are he really simply is deluded. He even said that he was a liaison officer to the government in Kiev seeking to enlist Afghan fighters via Pakistan. A journalist from Newsweek Romania said, "I viewed him as an idealistic, innocent, genuine person without any murderous instinct." And that was after he was identified as this would-be gunman. But the black and white, good versus evil, tells me either he's good at his job of imitating an American, or he really is just a delusional lunatic. He said that Vladimir Putin was a terrorist who needs to be ended. I assume he means killed. And that he needs to burn the Kremlin to the ground. Or that we do. I don't know who we is. He wrote Ukraine's Unwinnable War. And somehow he wanted to kill Trump back in 2023, I think, where he wanted to kill him based on his desire to exit the nuclear deal with Iran. So if the narrative is true, now let's just assume that he was just a delusional lunatic, which may well be the case, that being a delusional lunatic is being an American. Because if that's true, what he's done is wholesale absorb the regime's narrative and acted on it. Because if the regime's narrative was true and Putin is this wild animal, then any action against him or any action in favor of his enemies would be a rational one. And the same thing goes for what the regime has been saying about Donald Trump. Now, when he was in office, I was somewhat of a critic of his. Many of you remember, largely over foreign policy, especially the Israeli situation. He was very hard on Russia. But the typical American, I say like the normie American, has been told that he was a Russian candidate so many times that they've come to believe it. Now, Dmitry Peskov, the spokesman for the president's office in Russia, and he said, concerning his alleged links with Kiev, he said, that's not us, but the U.S. intelligence services who should be thinking about this. In any case, playing with fire has its consequences. He said, Russia has never interfered in any way in this. We're not interfering now. It's difficult to say here. It is really not our business. But we, of course, closely monitor the information that comes from the U.S. We see how tense the situation is there, including between political competitors. The political struggle is intensifying. The most different or distinct methods are today being used. Now, the two assassination attempts occurred at very interesting times. This one, a few days after the debate where he wiped the floor with this idiot that the regime put up to challenge him. That's allegedly ahead in the polls, despite people really not knowing who she is, who's saying very little. There has been more than one person to say that now surviving two assassination attempts, as weak as the second one was, and the ones years ago were like this too, they never quite got a shot off. But Donald Trump has this air of invincibility at this point, which goes to the brainstem, which goes to the most primitive motives of humanity. You know, the monarch who could lead a nation into battle and win could do no wrong. When the unelected Biden was talking about something or other, he said, I have one job, and that's to beat Donald Trump. So we're done talking about the debate. It's time to put Trump in or the bullseye. Now, Vance stated, and you can't argue with him here, the central premise of the Biden campaign is that President Donald Trump is an authoritarian fascist who must be stopped at all costs. That rhetoric led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. The media, of course, is well aware. I mean, going to the press saying, do you realize what you're doing is incredibly stupid? They are well aware, probably even more than we are, as to what they're doing. Getting rid of Donald Trump, despite his very moderate political agenda. Now, he's been radicalized since 2016. But I remember, and I said on the show, people are yelling and screaming about him because they were told to hate him. The New Republic issued something in July, American Fascism, what it would look like, and they chose the cover image of a campaign poster from 1932, making the silly argument, of course, according to them, that if you could go back to 1932, Germany could very easily have explained away Herr Hitler's excesses and been persuaded that his critics were going overboard. Of course, it wasn't long after that that they changed their point of view. Although it really didn't change their point of view, they changed their public expression of it. And they were talking about Thomas Matthew Crooks and how these people pretend to be shocked at all of this. But they're well aware. A lot of people claim that these aren't really inside jobs because they were so bad at it. But that doesn't demonstrate anything to me. The entire lack of self-awareness in there, the regime's complete disengagement from the average American, whether normie or otherwise. People still think that the two American factions are all there is and that they have 50% of the electorate. But it's also the case that the left is the dominant ideology. It's the official subsidized ideology. And as such, they have overwhelming control of the national media. Now, the Indian writer back in July said, first they sued him, then they prosecuted him, then they tried to take him off the ballot. The only thing more tragic than what just happened is that, if you're being honest, it wasn't totally a shock. Biden's inevitable ritual condemnation of political violence today. And it makes me laugh that something like 60% of members of the Democratic Party have a great deal of trust in the press. Americans in general, about 40%, have no trust in media whatsoever. And that's gone through the roof since 2020. We all know what happened. And back in May of 2020, Black Lives Matter. You remember the BS story about George Floyd? None of it's true, of course. It's an invented story. He died of a drug overdose or high blood pressure or a heart attack in the police cruiser. As the first autopsy showed, then the regime paid for another one that came up with the proper result. Some writers have called it shockingly sympathetic, the media has been to these violent people. We've tried to get to the heart. We talked about the Mexican cartels in El Salvador. The left sees themselves as these very same people. They don't see themselves as distinct from them. Everything is about power. There is no reality. This is a postmodern empire. And we all know what the regime can do, how they could twist any story. You can't believe anything they say, Johnson's law notwithstanding. Because even if they were knowledgeable about this area, they're still not going to tell the truth about it. So, Ruth, the regime keeps, the opposite of the regime, pro-Russian elements keep talking about, usually on the sort of the old Soviet style, talk about the Nazism of the Ukrainian government, which is laughable. It's a pseudo-nationalist and very Judaic regime that makes use of certain either legitimate or pseudo-nationalist groups. Although I can't imagine any real nationalist group fighting for Zelensky. But there was a 2023 Semaphore report citing this guy as the actual head of the International Volunteer Center in Ukraine, empowering volunteers that, you know, subsidized by corporate America. They said that he was involved in military and paramilitary activities. You think he would do a better job if that's the case. And yes, that was right. He owns a shed building company in Hawaii. And somehow still a supporter of the left. But if he's telling it, let's say he's telling half of what he says is true. That suggests he isn't just your average American. Shed building company owner may well be just a front, or he's just a nut. I don't know how you could be a nut and run a business, but I haven't looked too deeply into that. It doesn't interest me enough. But Edward Snowden, I think some of you have seen this too. The whistleblower posted on Twitter, and I'm not that deep in the social media since I got kicked off Facebook, but the shooter, or the would-be shooter in the intelligence agencies is pretty clear at this point. He said, "We know little so far, but with alleged Trump shooter's personal and public participation in military activity in Ukraine, it's hard to imagine the White House agencies can claim zero contact, clean hands with him." Something of an Oswald vibe here. Congress should get answers. And it's funny that Congress should get answers as if, you know, they're going to do that or they have any desire to do that. Secret Service is under suspicion. But this is what happened when you don't have a real election. Biden has no right to be where he is. And it took Donald Trump to expose him in the same way that he exposed Harris a few days ago. I made it a point not to watch these, but it's funny to watch the results of them. Now, who's been governing the U.S. in the last few years? I've read, I forget who said it was those three guys, Bruce Reed, Mike Donilon, and Steve Ricchetti. If you remember, Donilon was the representative for BlackRock. He used to sit on their board, in fact, or at least one of their local organizations, which shouldn't surprise anybody. So you're talking about two assassination attempts in 9 weeks, both unsuccessful. In a context where we don't even know who's running the executive branch. Vice President, she's not really, and neither is Biden president. He doesn't know where he is, even if he was legitimately elected. They knew. I mean, he was the ultimate front man when they installed him in office, as Time magazine said. But in no way could this wooden, and on all three, the regimes for all three elections, 16, 20, 24, put up very weak candidates, almost as if to show us that they have total control, there's nothing we're going to do about. Again, people who listen to me shouldn't be all that shocked about all of this. And you'd think that after 34 years of this, I would have a stronger stomach. I do not. And those have been going on about the ending American democracy, which is true if by democracy you mean liberalism, which is what they mean, or installing himself as dictator for life. Again, all of these are projections. Do you remember the press conference with Joe Biden with the red hellish background with soldiers on either side of him, giving that impression that he's going to smash all of his opponents, which has been forgotten about, like the Time magazine article that admitted that they stole the election. Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders have all said something like this at one time or another. And I came across a woman whose name I can't remember, Caitlin Johnstone, I think it might be. She has a list of because of Trump things. She's all right. Not the brightest person, but she's okay. And here's what she says. Because of Trump, Democrats have moved from despising Bush and Cheney for their warmongering to loving Bush and Cheney and warmongering. Because of Trump, the Democratic Party has been able to move much further towards warmonging corporatism than it could have ever gotten away with before, while still framing themselves as a moderate alternative. Because of Trump, both parties are now campaigning on who's the most Reagan-y Ronald Reagan. Because of Trump, Democrats went from trashing John McCain to worshiping him as a saint. Because of Trump, Democrats went from opposing the Bush administration's post-9/11 authoritarianism to cheering for the FBI and CIA in the destruction of the First Amendment. Because of Trump, everyone's arguing about whether immigrants are eating cats and dogs instead of the act of genocide in Gaza. Because of Trump, the last presidential debate was two corporate warmongers arguing over who loves Israel more, with a Democrat pledging to have the world's most lethal fighting force to use against nations like Russia, China, and Iran. Because of Trump, conversations about universal health care and living wage have been completely killed off and replaced with conversations about the threat of fascism and the death of American democracy. Because of Trump, Democrats moved from mocking the Cold Warrior Russia baiting of Mitt Romney and saying the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back to now demanding more and more nuclear brinksmanship against Russia. Now, this is somewhat of an exaggeration. This is what the press does. The left has always been in favor of crushing their opponents. Bush doing it was a bit of a problem, but now they're doing it, so it's a good thing. I mean, eating cats and dogs, well, they eat anything that isn't nailed down. Who loves Israel more? Well, she's dead right about that. Debates can still go on with this nonsense, but we don't speak the same language anymore. She offers no reason for the last one, the Cold Warrior Russia baiting. Well, the difference is simply ideology. Vladimir Putin is somewhat of a Eurasianist conservative of one form or another, and that's certainly true. Therefore, fighting him is perfectly okay. It's like Netanyahu's cabinet wanting to, you know, get rid of the fags and everything else. Well, that's okay. It's not okay because no matter he's a Jew or not, that's why suddenly it became okay to talk about Israeli genocide. Where Israel's been doing this for a long time. Only when his cabinet started talking like that did they, and this is a fairly radical cabinet, which has now fallen apart. But so what she says is sort of true. It's a bit heavy on the rhetoric. I don't think she just realized that the left, like all revolutionaries who, you know, have taken over, all revolutions lead to civil war and war in general. The left revolutionary juggernaut that the U.S. is going to be at war with right-wing forces of various types, from the Taliban to Russia to Lukashenko. Anyway, but this isn't Donald Trump at all, and this woman should know this. It's the media and corporate America's ludicrous reaction to him, where in 2016 he had quite the moderate platform for those eight people who bothered to read it. Now, going back to Ruth again, he wrote, I guess it was Twitter, "I'm willing to fly to Krakow and go to the border of Ukraine to volunteer and fight and die. Can I be example? Can I be the example? We must win." Well, by saying that he wants to fly to Krakow means that he knows that there's a certain way to get into Ukraine. It's hard to just fly in. You have to go to Poland and then take the train few friends of mine have already done that. So maybe there is some truth. You know, there's some middle ground here. Apparently this guy came up with MASA, Make American Slave Again. And he's more than just the Ukrainian side. He's simply a neocon. But this is what happens when stupid people, in their Machiavellian way, who know only but power, call Donald Trump a Russian agent. It's the same guy, you know, the same mentality that killed Robert Fico, or the attempted assassination of Robert Fico in Slovakia. He just barely survived that, as some of you remember. He's definitely a member of NAFO, that troll network, but that's connected to governments. In fact, all of these organizations are connected to NATO and Western governments. So, given this concern with foreign policy, which he knows, quite frankly, very little about, it's hard for the intelligence angle not to be brought up, at least. One of the hallmarks of Trump's platform is to bring a resolution to this artificially dragged-out war. He's going to stop the complete depopulation of Ukraine, in other words, and put pressure on Kiev to actually become a neutral, like Finland was when the Soviet Union was around, because their peace was acceptable. With Putin's Russia, now Sweden and Finland have to be mobilized against it. But because of this rhetoric and these people's desire to project their own evils onto someone else, their own vices onto someone else, they've become obsessed. The Russian-backed threat to democracy, who's selling out Ukraine and the U.S. to Vladimir Putin, that's enough to push people who are already psychologically imbalanced to commit acts of terror. Especially when they're, you know, the NAFO people, they talk about violence all the time, and amazingly, they get away with it. Isn't that shocking? But Ruth did say, or Ruth, whatever it is, that he went to join the International Legion, and then he said the New York Times about his plans. He said, I was going to go to Afghanistan, and he was going to purchase passports for them somehow and get them to Ukraine. But yeah, the FBI says he's on their radar, and that's as far as it goes. You can make the argument that he was working as an aspect or an element of the deep state in the U.S., and I'm choosing my words carefully, government agencies, in collusion with their Ukrainian proxies. Even if it's indirect, you know, they don't really need much encouragement if he's nuts to begin with, and he clearly is. But how far he went to realize these plans is, I simply don't know. And I don't believe anything I'm told in that regard. This is how not only Johnson's Law has these tremendous domestic implications, but how foreign policy has immediate domestic policy changes, including the possibility of murder. Because he had the AK, a beautiful, simple little rifle, I assume it had the banana clip and everything, he was going to shoot more than Donald Trump. Johnson's Law, in this regard, is creating a generation of people who really believe that foreign policy is a video game, this Rambo-style action movie trope of exactly what he said, black and white. Good versus evil. That's exactly how the media relays this. And that goes for Iran, that goes for China, and after that, North Korea, Venezuela, and frankly, anyone who isn't in favor of endless war against nationalism, wherever it can be found. I say all the time that projection is something you have to know about to understand the political positions of not just individuals, but groups. Projection is a kind of therapy itself. It's a relief from guilt to fluff off your vices onto someone else, especially this created someone else. The Johnson's Law is relevant because we're not talking about Russia the way that the regime talks. They're talking about something that they've created in their minds. All of a sudden, the regime is talking about first strike nuclear capability. Where's the peace movement? Where are these people? Remember in Germany in the 80s, there were millions of people allegedly opposing American nuclear weapons. Not a syllable. But despite all that, the empire is simply imploding. I've said that this kind of thing doesn't come from a position of strength. before anything could occur domestically, any kind of real open battle between left and right or normality and liberalism, with the regime fully on the latter side, because it is liberalism and leftism, the empire may implode. Since World War II, the regime has been at war with someone or other. War is their lifeblood. Rarely is it debated with any rational focus. False flags and lies are everywhere, although, as I've said before, I don't think the Gulf of Tonkin, at least there was two of them, certainly the first one was not false. Second one may be, but when you read the first-hand accounts, it's probably not. 21st century, really, I should say, in the 10 years prior to that, changed everything, whether it be Yugoslavia or Iraq. After 9/11, you have Afghanistan, renewed action in Iraq, Libya, jihadists, ISIS, the creation of the U.S. into Syria against its legitimate government, and these color revolutions always leading to mass poverty, which is their point. BlackRock has now taken over and owns, or at least highly influences, the Soros groups and Rand Institute and things like that. But Johnson's Law is so relevant here because they're creating a reality that isn't there. If you remember the Wolfowitz Doctrine in 1992, you know who Wolfowitz was, the concept of preemptive attacks on countries that are allegedly plotting to harm the U.S., which are, or at least at the time, was zero. And of course, you can't have a congressional resolution to justify something like that. Pepe Escobar, who I've cited before, uses the word hegemon, where I use the word regime. It's the same kind of thing. Counter-hegemony is everything from BRICS Plus to the SCO and whatever. Escobar says this concerning American foreign policy. The hegemon is calculating for a world war to halt multipolarity. It supports Israel's Gaza genocide as a necessary evil to win hard in West Asia, figuring who's going to care about the war once it goes global. The Ukrainian conflict, the proxy war by the U.S. and NATO allies against Russia, with Ukrainian soldiers dying by the hundreds of thousands to satisfy American desires, and a vain attempt to weaken Russia and bring about regime change against the leadership of Vladimir Putin. Of course, Ukrainian conflict, this is what the regime wants to bring about, this defeat of Russia, and gain the final victory in a rivalry that did not exist in the Cold War. Now, detente and coexistence was the slogan during the Cold War. Yes, the U.S. fought around the fringes, but not even at the height of the Vietnam War, where Americans talking about fighting Soviets directly. But when NATO pushed eastward, taking Georgia, threatening to take Ukraine, even targeting Belarus before Lukashenko, the point of this NATO expansion is that nuclear weapons could be placed right on Russia's border, really without any protest, except from people like me and you. But when you hear people like Biden and academics and journalists saying that the Russian invasion was unprovoked, you imagine the level of ignorance you have to possess to say something like that. It's been long-standing practice for the U.S. to try to goad its adversary into attacking first. You know, Pearl Harbor was an obvious example. Ukrainian army was being built up ever since 2014, if not 2004, along with sanctions against Russia that failed miserably, blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines, and then deindustrializing what was left of Germany, Britain, really, and the rest of EU. The only people who have benefited has been Russia. Johnson's Law says that the media has nothing to say about any of this. It doesn't know, and even if it did know, it has no right to say anything. But who has been the aggressor? The regime has. What country's wars have been responsible for the most deaths? As Bharat Dogra said, the war on terror alone, 4.5 million deaths, according to Brown University. That's a minimum. And then you have to add, you know, indirect support, proxy wars, the violence of, you know, coups and even color revolutions. When they get violent, that death toll is going to increase. The regime is fully responsible. The agent for peace has been Vladimir Putin. This demonization, without evidence, without argument, has proceeded way beyond even ethnic contempt. False propaganda over a long period of time can result in problems in policymaking because they're forced to respond not to realities, but to whether it be projections or these constructions of an enemy that doesn't, in fact, exist. You can't talk about improving relations with Russia. I mean, this is where the whole Russia conspiracy theory came from with Trump in 2016. Because I think at one point he said he wanted to improve relations. Well, if he said that about the Soviet Union in the 1970s, he would have been lauded. But because now the ideologies are liberal against conservative in foreign policy, and now blatantly laid out in foreign policy, what would have caused accolades in the 70s is causing condemnation and assassination attempts. Who knows? If they're successful, they may be called suicide attempts. I don't know. But it's way beyond bias. And that's why I bring in the psychological elements to it. I mean, Barbara Walters was interviewing, you know, Fidel Castro. All the left-wing figures have been interviewed. But Tucker Carlson says something? And he's Putin's puppet. The only difference is that the regime is leftist and revolutionary. It has created a revolution. Russia stands in the way. Globalization, the Great Reset, these are revolutionary doctrines. People realize, well, what has changed? Well, that's the only thing that's really changed. And I'll add maybe the fact that the U.S. is a far weaker country than it was in the 1970s. I quoted Bharat Dogra, who I never heard of before, who brings my statistics up to the present. He talks about Putin taking over Russia after the disaster of the 1990s. I think this is partly why the regime will never forgive Putin, because he turned on the people who were going to simply sell the country. It happened in Ukraine without much of an endpoint, and now the war just destroys whatever's left. That's what this war partially is about. And he talks about, you know, child mortality. U.S. is, I think, 6.2 per 1,000 live births. In the Russian Federation, it's 5.1. And the decline in Russia was rapid, but only after Putin took over. It used to be 20, and it became 5.1 from 2000. Of course, immigration does not help the American number. Infant mortality in Russia went from 19 to 4.8 in 2023. And under Putin, it radically went down. Maternal mortality rate, the same kind of statistics, was 52 to 14 in 2020 per 100,000 births. In the U.S., it increased from 20 to 21 in the same period. There was a 3% per year increase in the maternal mortality rate. Again, immigration, I have the feeling, has a lot to do with that, but also this permanent depression the U.S. is in. Remember what the life expectancy was in 2000 in Russia? It was 65 years. In certain regions, it was in the 50s. And now it's up to, if not beyond, the American number, over 23 years. So as far as the progress, as far as the welfare, as far as the wealth of Russia, Putin's leadership deserves all the praise in the world. And that's what terrifies the regime. Because he didn't do this on liberal terms. He did this on statist and nationalist terms. And throwing these oligarchs who were sponsored by the U.S. in prison, which is what made him so popular initially, allowed the U.S. or American elite from Harvard University to Washington, D.C. to New York, deal with the guilt of what they did in Russia in the 1990s, and is able to project that onto Vladimir Putin or Alexander Lukashenko or whoever they've created in their minds. This was sufficient to permit the entire full mobilization of NATO to encircle and defeat not only Russia, but China. Clearly, the aggressor is only the United States or the leftist regime. Ukraine is the victim of an entirely avoidable proxy war. that started at least in 2004, but in earnest in 2014 with the Maidan Revolution, and it's now being depopulated without any functional economy. This was an elite people, high IQ, the most advanced degrees per capita in any other country in the world, and now look at it. So the projection of all of this evil onto somebody, whether it be me and you, or Donald Trump, or Vladimir Putin, or whatever, expect more of this in the future. And that goes straight to the heart of the ridiculous assassination attempt from this guy. Thank you, everyone, again, for tuning in, listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.